time schedule, so I will try to keep to my time allotment, and Mom will do the same. And we have a store in Tampa, in Plant City, called Southern Hospitality, and it is one of my favorite places to go visit because it just, all the signs say y'all, and, you know, there's a lot of scripture up on all the things, and I realize when I'm here how much that Southern Hospitality is just exuded in many of you women. We have had the pleasure of being able to stay in the homes of the Kettners for the past 2 years and with Dwight and Terry Banta this time, and we appreciate all that those women do, and I know many of you have brought food for those times, and we enjoy sharing a meal with you afterwards and spending as much time getting to know you all as we can. It's been a blessing to us, and we appreciate your Southern hospitality, and we treasure that. Growing up in Carolinas, we're Southern girls, even though we're transplanted to Tampa, which is not the South. It is North Miami or North Cuba. You know, it's not exactly the South. But so I am really excited to talk with you this morning about Miriam. She is a woman that I have admired for a long time, and I feel like she doesn't get a lot of spotlight because while her life is paralleled so closely with her brother's, there are just a few glimpses, three sections of dialogue of which Miriam is a part. And I wish we had a whole monologue. I would love to hear. I think she had a lot to say. But we're going to try to look past just the obvious examples of Moses and Aaron and see what we can learn about this woman, Miriam, who is really a centerpiece of Israelite history and a remarkable woman. Is this clicking a lot? Oh, now it is. Now it is. Okay. It is attached.
Let's not get the accessories mixed in.
Okay. So I really have loved studying Miriam, and I had always, when we lived in Nashville, we left Nashville, and I had one baby in my tummy that I didn't know if it was a boy or a girl, and I said, if this is a girl, she's going to be Miriam, because she's my little songwriter. I just have a feeling that, you know, Miriam has a little moment where she sings a song before all of Israel, so that was going to be my little Music City baby, but it was a boy, and he's Jennings, my little Jennings Chapel baby. So Miriam has a special place in my heart. So we're going to look closely at the timeline of Miriam's life. I'm a big timeliner when I study. I like to look at the whole picture of where Miriam is. So on your handout, you have a timeline at the bottom and the scriptures that list the key places in her life where we can get a glimpse into this woman. So we'll begin in Exodus chapter 2. And I know this is a familiar story, but we so often focus on Moses that I'd like for us to really focus in on Miriam and what her role was in Exodus chapter 2. You know that the Hebrews are slaves in Egypt for 400 years. There is a Pharaoh that doesn't know Joseph, and he has given an edict to try to diminish the people of Israel by killing the baby boys. And we can all, I'm sure you have all related at times to the fear that that would have struck in the hearts of all of the Israelites, but especially the mothers that were with child. So, chapter 2, we'll start in verse 1. Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a daughter of Levi. The woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got him a wicker basket and covered it over with tar and pitch. Then she put the child into it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to find out what would happen to him. The daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the Nile with her maidens walking alongside the Nile, and she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid, and she brought it to her. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the boy was crying, of course, and she had pity on him and said, this is one of the Hebrews' children. Then his sister said to Pharaoh, to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women that she may nurse the child for you? And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go ahead. So the girl went and called the child's mother. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages. So the woman took the child and nursed him. The child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she named him Moses and said, because I drew him out of the water. Okay, so Hebrews mentions the faith of Jochebed and Amram, and that they trusted God and put that basket in the river. And it was a very bold move and a courageous one. And I cannot imagine how Jochebed did that. And in all the pictures that we have of that, you know, I've looked back at the storybooks my children have and the Ten Commandments of Moses and even The Prince of Egypt, a movie my kids have watched a lot. I always picture Jochebed then turning to Miriam and saying, "Now go watch the basket. Go look out for your brother." But the text just says Miriam did it. There's no indication that anybody told her to do that. And even if her mother had told her, "Go watch over the basket," to have anticipated that Pharaoh's daughter would be the one to meet the basket and to tell Miriam, "What you're going to do if this happens is this." It doesn't seem that this was orchestrated. That Miriam may have just had an instinct for protection. And if anyone has an older sister, they might know that sometimes older sisters just look out for you whether you ask them to or not. Sometimes they're a little bit bossy. And maybe Miriam had that bent already. But Jochebed sends the baby on, but Miriam stays behind and she watches. And then she stands on the bank of the river and she sees Pharaoh's daughter who should have known the law. And the law was, if you find a baby boy, put him in the river. And yet she takes him out. And then with boldness and courage that I don't know where she got it from, if it wasn't from the Lord, Miriam has an idea. And she shares it. "I can find you a Hebrew woman." And that is what gives Moses the chance to come back and learn who his people are. That's what makes him the leader that will come back and deliver the people of Israel. If Miriam had stood on that riverbank, like my daughter, with her thumb in her mouth and not spoken up at that time, perhaps the Lord would have sent something else. But Miriam was the vessel. Miriam, as a girl, and she could have been anywhere. I would imagine she had to be at least 5 years old to have put together that sentence. But she could have been even upwards to 18. We don't really have an indicator of how old she was. We just know it still calls her a girl and his sister. So she's certainly not a married woman or a grown woman. But the courage and the boldness that it took is going to stick with Miriam. And that tenacity will be her trademark throughout her life. For good or ill, she will speak up when others remain silent. She will stand up for God and speak forth what she believes needs to happen. And I think there's a lot we can learn from that. If you think about it, how do we even know this story? Moses, we assume, recorded the events of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers. But how did he was 3 months old. He was in a basket. He didn't know what happened. I have a feeling Miriam, when she was, you know, changing his diaper, and she's little, like, "I saved your life. Don't forget it." You know, and perhaps as he grew up, he heard that story over and over again. My twins, one of them is a little bit more take charge than the other. And one day when they were supposed to be down for a nap, I came in to find that Palmer was changing Harper's diaper. He just decided that needed to be done, and he took care of it. And we have told that story over and over again. I have a feeling when they're like 14, he'll be like, "If you ever tell that story again, I will disown you, mother." But Miriam probably held that in her heart. She knew that that role was important, and Moses knew the story. He knew exactly what had happened and who was involved. And so I think that is a really neat glimpse into Miriam as a young woman. And we're going to take a little sidebar here to talk about one of my most favorite things, and my sisters love to hear me talk about this, but I can't help but look at the birth order of these three characters that we know so well. There are very few families in the Bible where you have equal storytelling time from multiple siblings. It is usually, you know, you've got the 12 sons of Jacob, but you know Joseph. And you've got the 7 sons of Jesse, but it's David that we meet. But with Jochebed and Amram, we know all three of their children by name. And we have enough pictures of their life to see what they were like. And Dr. Kevin Lehman has written a book called The Birth Order Book. And I have read it way too many times. In each of my pregnancies, I read it again to figure out, what is this kid going to be like? And I'm bad about labeling. But I have found it helpful in a very practical way when I'm relating to other people to kind of identify these might be their characteristics, the things their strengths are, and their weaknesses. So on your little worksheet, the second page behind has just three boxes. for birth order basics, and you can jot down anything. You may have read this. You may know a whole lot more about this than I do. I just thought we would share together for a minute looking at the lives of these people, because I think it's very practical. Micah chapter 6, verse 4 says, "For I brought you from the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the house of slavery, and I sent before you Moses, Aaron, and Miriam." According to the chronology, that's backwards birth order. Moses was the youngest. Aaron's the middle, and Miriam has to be older than Aaron. In Exodus chapter 7, we learn that Aaron is 3 years older than Moses. So I'm saying that Miriam has to be the oldest, because no three-year-old or less could have done what she did at the river. So if we can assume, and there may have been other siblings, they're not listed, but we know these three, that Miriam's older than Aaron, and Aaron is older than Moses, that we can look at how their birth order affected their roles within their family and even in the whole nation of Israel. So the premise of birth order is that each child in a family takes on certain characteristics based on the expectations of their role within the family. And whatever you are for the first 5 years of your life is usually what is kind of locked in for the rest of your life. Now, there are lots of variables, and we won't get into all that today because I don't want to spend too much time on that. Sometimes, though, if there is a death in the family, or in this case, Moses is taken out of the family unit pretty early, then sometimes that can skew things. But you are most directly affected by the sibling that is just ahead of you. So if they follow the pattern of birth order in classic nature, then you probably will too. But if they veer drastically from it, then you may take their role. So just to give you that background. So Miriam is the oldest, and we have in her a clear example of an oldest sister who is doing all the things that a big sister usually does. She's taking responsibility, and that's kind of the key word I want you to think of with a firstborn. They are usually the responsible, accountable person. They're the one that mama says, "Oh, when we're out the door, pull it closed, okay, because I'm getting the baby in the car seat, so you do that." The oldest sister probably knows how to do the stroller because mama has given her that job. An older brother is the first one to mow the grass. If you have married an oldest child, maybe he's rebelling now, but my husband was the firstborn Olsen boy, and he mowed the grass. That was his job. Eric, I don't know what he was doing. I think he got the riding mower by the time he came along. But, you know, Adam's the one that took out the trash, that mowed the grass, that did those things because he was the first one to be able to do it. Miriam is very responsible. She will take on the responsibility of the nation multiple times. And there are more CEOs, presidents of companies, high achievers, mayors, politicians, that is generally firstborns. And certainly there are exceptions to that rule. But that's kind of the nature of a firstborn, is to be the people pleaser and the responsible party. Then you get to the secondborn, the middle child. And in case you didn't know, Carrie Ann's the oldest, I'm the middle, and Bonnie's the baby. So we might fit these. Probably why I like it so much. The middle child, Aaron. Now in this case, he's going to become the leader of the family because he's the first male, and in their patriarchal society, that was a bigger deal than just being where you were in the birth order. But he is, by nature, a mediator. And that is what you really think of with a middle child. They learn to help make peace, sometimes between parents and other children, sometimes between other siblings. But a middle child is wired to avoid conflict. I think sometimes you see there's conflict with if the firstborn, you know, doesn't follow the rules and there's conflict, then the middle child will be very sneaky because they're going to learn. I'm not taking that conflict on head on. I'm seeing head nods, like some of you might know people like this. What is Aaron's role that God gives him for Israel? What does he become? Do you remember? He's the high priest. His profession is go between. He mediates for the nation of Israel. And you will see him time and again. I think I see him knocking Moses down, like, "Come on, get down. We got to protect these people." He gets between the people and God, and he goes to bat for them, and he avoids conflict to a fault. When they get to the golden calf, Aaron is going to have his meltdown, and he will not stand up to the people. Without Moses there, and I don't know what, maybe Miriam was taking a nap. She finally needed a break, but he does not stand up. He is not as strong of a leader as he should have been, but he is by nature a mediator. And then the baby, the third born, is generally characterized by being charismatic. They will learn to find attention and take it and use that. And sometimes that can be manipulative, but many times it can be just flat out entertaining. And you have, with mediators and middleborns, the fields of education and medicine have a lot of mediator middle children in them. That's something that middle children are naturally drawn to, kind of those service-oriented careers. And the entertainment industry is just flush with babies. And sometimes you get a baby that is really detail-oriented, and they can be some of the best politicians. Kevin Lehman says the election where it was Bill Clinton, George Bush Sr., the elder George Bush, right? And Ross Perot, that was the three birth orders in effect. And Clinton was the oldest child. He was polished. He was poised. He was a great speaker. Bush, he was trying to make everybody happy, and he was a mediator. And Ross Perot was, look at me. And he had a lot of attention and was a very dynamic leader. So Moses, Aaron, and Miriam really fit those characteristics. And, you know, Bonnie likes to remind me that while I might sound like the baby's irresponsible, God used babies a lot in his story. And so many times you see he's passed over all the responsible ones and chosen the charismatic one. And I think part of that is those babies learn to wear their heart on their sleeve. And God's looking for our hearts. And what Moses gives him time and again, while he shirks his responsibility for a while, and he is gone for almost 40 years, when he comes back, it is with a devoted heart to God, and he is passionate in his leadership of the people, and he wears his heart on his sleeve, but he keeps coming back to the heart of God every time. And so God uses Moses in a huge way to lead the nation of Israel with the support of his mediating middle brother and his very responsible older sister. You also see the tragic flaw of each of these characters exemplified in Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. Miriam, do you remember? We're going to talk about it in a minute, but what does she do wrong that she is punished for publicly? Does anybody remember that story? Yeah, she stands up to Moses. She oversteps her role, and she says, God spoke to me too, and he shouldn't have this wife. And she's stirring it up. So her tragic flaw, and the problem for a lot of firstborns, is sometimes taking charge of too much, taking over, being a little bossy sometimes. She speaks up against Moses, and she's punished for it. Aaron, same thing. His tragic flaw, the thing that his weakness is his desire to avoid conflict, and we already talked about a little bit with the golden calf. He is punished for that, because he didn't stand up to the people and tell them what was the right thing to do. And his sons do not follow in his steps of honoring God. And I think that's another case where you see he was probably just trying to keep everybody happy, and this is what happens. And then Moses, I think if you can put your finger on it, it is hard to impugn motives on Moses. Plus, he wrote the book, so, you know, he's not really going to say it was a real bad day for me. But it seems that what he is punished for when he hits the rock instead of speaking to it is for maybe going a little too far in, you might say, his showmanship or his charisma. It seems like Moses got in the way of what God wanted him to do. His personality got a little ahead of where God wanted him to be, and he took some of the glory for himself instead of giving it to God. And that is what he is punished for, and kind of what makes for his tragic flaw. So I hope you can learn a little bit from those types, because sometimes I have realized in my life that's why I relate so well to this person. I mean, I have always had an oldest child in my life that has kind of been my leader. And I followed Carrie Ann all the way through school, and then I met Adam, and I just, you know, and he takes charge. And I appreciate that, and that suits my nature as a middle child. And I look at our eldership at Henderson, I see these roles in those men, and I see why it works. And I think sometimes, you know, if you are a teacher, you might see in your classroom, oh, wow, I've got 7 firstborn girls in this class, and whew, they all need their own group to manage, you know. Sometimes all those alphas, it helps to identify that. But whatever your birth order is, or whether you identify with this or not, I think it's important that we see within our families and within the kingdom that God uses all of us, that God took those strengths and those weaknesses, and he preserved them for us to see their personality. Don't just look at these Bible people as a flat, you know, flannel graph on the board that he did that. But try to see the person behind that. And I hope that helps you kind of put skin on the bones of those 3 characters. And, you know, sibling rivalry is a huge issue throughout the Old Testament. And you don't, maybe we don't always give enough credit to that in our lives and to maybe our motives for things or within child rearing, it's helpful to sometimes see maybe this is happening because I'm expecting too much out of this one. Or maybe we need to not always video every single thing that they said that was cute, you know, because we might be setting them up to just be too charismatic. Helping us identify our strengths and weaknesses, I find helpful. So let's get back to in the text. Thank you for that sidebar. And I'd love, if you are, you know, interested in that, I'd love to talk with you about it afterwards. So our first glimpse on the timeline of Miriam is maybe a little mother hen who's taking a lot of responsibility and even goes so far as to speak to Pharaoh's daughter. The fact that we have this story shows us that God wanted us to see that Miriam used her boldness for his glory. And the story continues because Miriam spoke up. So at 40, Moses leaves Egypt, and Acts chapter 7, verse 23 tells us that fact. And Miriam is left behind with the rest of her family in slavery. And for 80 years, the Israelite slavery continues. And so while there seemed to be something really special about Moses, Miriam is left with, well, we saved that baby, and then he went to the house of Pharaoh, and he spent 40 years there, and now he's gone. And who knows where he is, and the Lord did not deliver us like we thought. But then we see in Exodus chapter 7 that Moses comes back. And Exodus chapter 7 and verse 5, the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I stretch out my hand on Egypt and bring out the sons of Israel from their midst. So Moses and Aaron did it. As the Lord commanded them, thus they did. Moses was 80 years old and Aaron 83. When they spoke to Pharaoh. So now it begins. The process of deliverance has arrived through Moses and Aaron. And that verse in Micah says, and Miriam, that she was also sent to help lead those people out. So now we have a middle-aged, for their time, Miriam, maybe bordering on an older woman in the community. And there is no mention of a husband and no mention of children for Miriam ever in the Bible. Whether she had them and that's just not mentioned is not clear. But as you know, most of the married women in the Bible, if they didn't have children, it was noted. There was, you know, they were barren sometimes for a reason or they were barren for a season. But Miriam, we get no notice. So maybe she was just a caretaker for her family. Maybe that was her role. I like to think of her as the church secretary of Israel because she just seems to be always there and she knows what's going on. And I have a feeling when they were numbering the people, she was the one writing it down. You know, that she, okay, you count and I'll write it. Because it doesn't seem that Miriam has any other family obligations other than God's people. And the Lord used that in a big way for Miriam. So she and her brothers lead the people out of the bondage in Egypt, and they get through the Passover, and they get out into the wilderness, and Pharaoh's army is coming, and the Red Sea is before them, and Moses will obey God, and the waters will part, and the people will cross. And turn with me to Exodus chapter 15, and we get to hear Miriam's voice again. Moses, we're actually back up to chapter 14, verse 30. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. When Israel saw the great power which the Lord had used against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses. And then Moses and the sons of Israel sang this song to the Lord. And it is 18 verses of Moses' song. and the children of Israel. I don't know how this was all literally said and how it is recorded for us, but Moses tells them all the things God has done. And get down to the bottom of that in verse 19 and then 20. So Moses leads the people in recounting the things God has done. It's really a sermon in song of telling them, he's done it. He's delivered you. And the horses of Pharaoh with his chariots and his horsemen went into the sea, and the Lord brought back the waters of the sea on them. But the sons of Israel walked on dry land through the midst of the sea. And verse 20 of Exodus chapter 15, Miriam the prophetess, Aaron's sister, took the timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dancing. And Miriam answered them, sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. The horse and his rider he has hurled into the sea. Now, I don't know exactly what it meant to be a prophetess in that time. It is the first time this term is used, is of Miriam. I don't know if that was the Lord's voice speaking through her, or if he had given her these words, or if it was just a woman that was so in touch with God through her prayers and her sacrifice that she just spoke and it was the prophecy. But everyone else is following Miriam's lead in this. All the women go out behind Miriam, and she shows them, here's how we express ourselves to God. We're rejoicing. We're praising that God has delivered us. If you look at the men as the song leaders in that, and Moses has preached the sermon and told everyone, this is what God has done, then Miriam leads in the response, the rejoicing. She is expressive, and she tells the women, come on, we've got to praise the Lord in this. And while that is very different from the way our corporate worship is conducted, it is here glaring at us, saying that women, it is okay to respond to the Lord. It is okay to show emotion. It is good to rejoice. And sometimes that is publicly, and sometimes that is just, you know, in the car with my children, when I see an accident, sometimes that's just praising God out loud, but that wasn't us, or praying for those people. But it is appropriate to be expressive about God. And I fear that sometimes in our desire to remain silent in the assembly, and that is appropriate, and I'm not calling for any women to stand up with a timbrel tomorrow morning. You know, I am not saying that that is our role, because this is a different time. And Miriam had an inspired role as a prophetess. But that it is perfectly appropriate for a woman to respond to God, to speak out to God. And sometimes that may be among other women, and sometimes that may be within our families, and sometimes that may be even on a more public stage. But that is not leadership over men to just say, praise the Lord. That is her saying, God delivered us. He did it. And praise the Lord together. And Miriam has a role. And I think it is given to us for a reason. That term prophetess is used several times after this. Deborah is also called a prophetess. And her role is incredible as a judge of Israel. She is paired with a strong military leader. But Deborah has a leadership role in Israel. Huldah is another woman in the Old Testament that is mentioned as a prophetess. And Isaiah's wife speaks prophecy. We have Anna in the New Testament waiting in the temple serving till she sees Jesus, and her words are recorded. And then the daughters of Philip in Acts are all listed as prophetesses. So, however that happened with Miriam, and we will see a little more detail with that when she speaks against Moses, that God is going to say, well, now you've gone beyond what I told you to say. But she is sacrificing her own role to serve his people in that way. I don't know what all the demands of sacrifice were on Miriam's life. Moses and Aaron are leading all the tribes, and they are spoken against time and time again. And you know when somebody talks about your family, how hard that is to hear. And these people grumble and complain about her brothers for her whole life. And maybe she joins in that a time or two. But at the end of the day, that's her people, that's her brothers, and this is her God. And Miriam speaks up. And she bore that for the kingdom. She turns all that fear and worry that they left in Egypt into praise to God. And they stand at the river, and once again, Miriam speaks up. And she is honored by God for that. So, it is always right to respond to God in whatever circumstance you find yourself, whether that is quietly, silently. But don't forget that God wired us to emotion. All of us always say, we hope we can just get through without the ugly cry. Sorry, we are stable people in real life. We just sometimes get a little emotional when we're speaking about people that we've studied this much. So the last glimpse of Miriam's life is in Numbers chapter 12. And I do like that we see a big issue here with Miriam. And I think it's here for a reason. And just like I just said that Miriam spoke up when no one else did, in this case, it was wrong. And she shouldn't have. And she is punished. But I kind of like that I can relate to her. Because if she was perfect, like Proverbs 31, like Mama gets to talk, that woman is hard for me to relate to because I don't see her flaws. But here we see that Miriam, you know, she had a bad day. And she said it, and she shouldn't have, and she is severely punished. But God gives us this for a reason. So in our lessons we're learning from Miriam, I hope you're seeing that. So Numbers chapter 12. Read with me. Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. And they said, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us as well?" And the Lord heard it. Now the man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth. Suddenly the Lord said to Moses and Aaron and Miriam, "You three come out to the tent of meeting." So the three of them came out. Then the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud and stood at the doorway of the tent, and he called Aaron and Miriam. And when they had both come forward, he said, "Hear now my words. If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, shall make myself known to him in a vision. I shall speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my household. With him I speak mouth to mouth, even openly and not in dark sayings. And he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant, against Moses?" So the anger of the Lord burned against them, and he departed. But when the cloud had withdrawn from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous, as white as snow. As Aaron turned toward Miriam, behold, she was leprous. And then Aaron said to Moses, "Oh, my Lord, I beg you, do not account this sin to us, in which we have acted foolishly and in which we have sinned. Oh, do not let her be like one dead, whose flesh is half eaten away when he comes from his mother's womb." And Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, "Oh God, heal her, I pray." But the Lord said to Moses, "If her father had but spit in her face, would she not bear her shame for 7 days? Let her be shut up for 7 days outside the camp, and afterwards she may be received again." So Miriam was shut up outside the camp for 7 days, and the people did not move on until Miriam was received again. Afterward, however, the people moved out from Hazeroth and camped in the wilderness of Paran. So, now towards the end of her life, we see Miriam's boldness get the best of her. And we were not allowed to say "shut up" when we were kids. We were not allowed to say that to each other. But you notice, and twice Miriam is told "shut up" and "get out of the camp." I know it wasn't like that. I know it's "shut up" because of the leprosy. But literally, she has spoken up and it wasn't right. And the Lord is going to silence her for a time. And I think that probably this humbles her for that last quarter of her life. While they are in the wilderness, we don't hear anything else about Miriam. So she speaks against Moses' wife, the Cushite woman. Now, Zipporah was from the land of Midian, and that's Moses' wife that we hear about in the beginning. It is not clear whether he took a second wife and Miriam was speaking against that, or this was just Zipporah had died, and maybe he married another woman that Miriam didn't get along with. Or maybe she was pagan acting. We don't know. But it was wrong. Whatever Miriam said was wrong to question Moses. And when she stirs that up with the people, God puts her in her place and says, "Yes, I have spoken to you. Yes, there are prophets, and you were one of them, but Moses is different. And don't speak against Moses. I speak with him face to face." So Miriam has asserted her authority among the people. She puts her and Aaron on the same role as Moses, and God says no. And can you imagine being called to that tent? You know, if you've gotten in trouble with your parents and they say, all of you come here right now. And then Moses, you stay out there. Aaron, Miriam, get in here. You know, and then you see Aaron mediate. Please save her. Don't let this happen to her. Moses goes to God on her behalf, but for 7 days, she's the one punished. And I don't know if that's because Aaron was the priest, but God lets it be known that Miriam did something wrong in this. And interestingly, though, at this point, the nation of Israel moves by the cloud. When the cloud moves, they pack up and they move. And God can move them at any time. And he sends her outside of the camp for 7 days, but he holds the tribes there. They wait. They could have moved on and left Miriam behind, but they wait until Miriam is clean again, and then the tribes move on. So there was a lesson for all of them to learn in this, and they will certainly speak against Moses again. But as far as Miriam and Aaron trying to put themselves on the same level with Moses, that will not happen again. And Numbers chapter 20 records the death of Miriam. It is significant in that it is recorded, and it is just a simple verse. In Numbers chapter 20, verse 1, then the sons of Israel, the whole congregation, came to the wilderness of Zin in the first month, and the people stayed at Kadesh. Now Miriam died there and was buried there. So there are three people that we are told specifically of their deaths, other than the rebellions that are squashed and those men that were killed in rebellion to God. But other than them, it is Miriam's death, then Aaron's death, and then Moses. And after that, all the generation of leaders that came through the Red Sea are gone. So it is significant that the Lord even mentions, records for us, that Miriam died, that her role, her time of service to that nation is gone. But all of these are mourned as the end of an era of leadership, and the last of that generation that led them through is passing away, and they will now enter the Promised Land with a new leader in Joshua. These three prominent siblings with their characteristics and their strengths teach us a lot about leadership. Some things that are specific to what I've learned from studying Miriam include she needed to know her role. God has given us as women a role within our families, within the church, within our communities. And that role is important. And the world does not want us to see a difference in our roles. And, you know, Satan has done a very good job of blurring lots of lines. Even what bathroom do you use? I cannot believe that battle has been won in some places. Whew. But we know what God gave us as women. And he gave us a place of service and a place of sacrifice. And in Miriam's case, hers was a place of importance. And that is not authority over men. And we don't need to grasp for that. And that doesn't need to be our desire. And there, you know, places where women speak to other women is a very appropriate place to use your life and your knowledge of the scriptures to teach. And he gives women that role, older women teaching the younger women. He tells us to teach our children, to love our husbands. Those are our roles. And that is a blessing. And when we work within that role, God is glorified. When we overstep those bounds, he is not. So let us all be careful to watch how we play that role out in our lives. Secondly, Miriam needed to keep watch over her heart, and that is a lesson for all of us. I know in my life, the busier I am, the less time I have to reflect on why am I doing the things that I am doing. And sometimes if we just sit down in the quiet of a morning or an evening and we think about, what did I do today? Why did I do it? Who am I trying to please? Who am I prioritizing in my life? Our motives matter. And Miriam's heart, it seems, got a little out of line there at the end, and that mattered to God. So sometimes we can do a lot of good in the kingdom, but it is important to have margin in our life so that we can watch our hearts and check that against the scriptures and pray and have that personal relationship with God that keeps our heart in the place of sacrifice and service. And then finally, there is a time to speak for God. We need to be courageous. We need to be loving when we speak for God, when we, you know, that role that Miriam took on. It was important that the people knew that she loved them, and that when she spoke to Pharaoh's daughter, she did that in an appropriate way. We can only train ourselves and our hearts by being in the Word of God. But when you have God's Word, when you that's what is the overflow of your heart, then your words will be what they need to be. And let us not be women that stand at the river silent. Miriam spoke up, and that's why we have her story. And there may be a watershed moment in your life that you've been standing there wondering, what do I say? I don't know what to say. Get in the Word. Find out what God says. And when that Word is in you, it will overflow, and you will have the words to speak up, as Miriam did, with courage and with boldness. Her life was a sacrifice of praise. And I have learned a lot from studying about this woman that in Micah chapter 6, in verse 4, we'll close with that verse. A verse I just discovered as I was studying for this class, because I didn't want to make more of Miriam's role than the Lord did. But I think it's very significant. Where is that book of Micah? Micah chapter 6 and verse 4. Indeed, I brought you up from the land of Egypt and ransomed you from the house of slavery, and I sent before you Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. A woman whose legacy is of sacrifice and her praise to God. And I hope that that is something that will be helpful in each of our lives as we seek to serve Him. Thank you. We'll take a 5-minute break.